Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Direction for Truth show with Richard Talk to Me Guy. And Sherry Edwards is in a building that is still in recovery from lightning strike. Had connectivity for a while. They've been working on it all day. Crews, many people with belts running around trying to figure it out. Didn't have connection. So Sherry won't be joining us today. We will be talking about the standing your ground with a narcissist. We're going to do it from a slightly different angle. Sherry had planned doing vocal prints and showing you what it actually looks like in the prints so that we could get an idea of using nano voice to be aware of narcissistic patterns and tendencies. But she can't. Be like listening to a show with Marcel Marceau. Just can't do it. But we'll be back with that. So we pulled up a great show about narcissism with Preston Nee, who's a professor of communication studies, who'd wrote a really great book, How to Successfully Handle Narcissists. And it's a great interview. I listened to it again. And it's a lot of information on just being aware of narcissistic patterns and tendencies. You're not nuts. Maybe it is them. There is that. And here we go.
Today's guest has an amazing subject. I mean, it really is. He has a broader scope, but really today we're focusing on narcissism and how to successfully, his book, Preston Nee's book is How to Successfully Handle Narcissists. And it's a great conversation. It's really quite amazing. Preston Nee is a professor, coach, and trainer in the areas of interpersonal effectiveness and professional coach communication. With 20 years of experience, Preston's dynamic presentations and powerful coaching have benefited thousands worldwide. He has worked with companies including Fortune 500, Intel, Microsoft, Hewlett-Packard, Lockheed Martin, Visa, and eBay, as well as coached executive managers and private individuals to identify their catalyst for success. He is among a number of his works. He is the author of How to Successfully Handle Narcissists, How to Communicate Effectively and Handle Difficult People, and How to Successfully Handle Passive-Aggressive People. And he has, as I say, his scope is, as you can see the arena, I'll put the website. His website is nipreston.com. And I'll put that in the show notes and in the link at Blog Talk Radio, because there is no WebEx feed today. Really, it's an amazing subject, and really, he has a great perspective on it. So here we go with Preston Nee.
My first question, Professor, would be, can you give us a foundational view of personality types so we have sort of a core foundation to work from?
You're talking about personality types in general?
Yes. Well, I mean, and Okay. Particularly, you know, leaning toward the communication style, are there personality types in communication styles, I guess I'll call it?
Absolutely. You ask a very big question that some people have spent their entire careers researching. In the time that we have with your audience, what I can do is to broadly categorize personalities into four major quadrants. Some personalities are very people-oriented, and they communicate based on relationship interests. Some are very creatively oriented. These tend to be more extroverts. They tend to have a lot of energy and passion. They're very innovative. Some are very analytical. These are the left brain types. They tend to think before they speak. They tend to look to the past for information to make decisions about the present and the future. And then the fourth type are the more dominant-driven personalities who desire success, ambition. They like to manage other people. They like to be in control. And depending on the personality type, each type's communication style is significantly different than the others in order to achieve their individual goals or to get away from certain fears that they may have.
And so is your goal in the work that you do in consulting and coaching people, do you put each group, and let's say a company calls you in to do some consulting, do you bring everybody into a room and then and with your skills identify who the people are and then sort of break them out into groups of types and have conversations, or how does the flow work? How do you, you know, obviously I'm guessing somebody in the company says, we have a problem here, we need help, and they call you.
Right, certainly.
How does that flow?
Company organizational situations, a lot of times the personality coaching is done private individually. So there's more permission for disclosure, more permission for authenticity, identifying weaknesses, being honest about one's weaknesses. In a group situation when I do training, then the information is presented more generally, and the audience is invited to reflect on which personality she or he may be, how to become the more mature version of this particular personality. For example, somebody who is very analytical but is not familiar with people skills can grow and learn that area. On the other hand, somebody who's very creative but lacks follow-through can learn to be more responsible. So once you understand your own personality type and the strengths and the weaknesses that come with it, you are given the opportunity to follow certain suggestions to become more successful in a real substantive way and become a more well-rounded, complete individual.
And how does, this is a term that we've heard bantered around for years now, how does emotional intelligence fit into this in terms of, is emotional intelligence being partially aware of what your personality type is, or is that a completely different animal?
No, being aware of oneself is a significant part of emotional intelligence. You know, there's the Greek oracle saying, know thyself, and there's a Chinese saying that goes, if you know yourself and you know others, you can enter into 100 battles and come out victorious 100 times. So self-knowledge is really the key, is really the foundation to success. And based on self-knowledge, then you can connect with the external world to learn how to best navigate different types of people and different types of situations, and more often than not, achieve success. Because you know how people work, you know how you yourself work, and you know what makes a successful joint venture or cooperation or relationship.
You've written so many books. Are most of them based on, okay, here's communication that we absolutely have, here's the problems, and here's how to bring people to a place where they can effectively communicate with any type of person?
Yes, I tend to have a very practical approach to communication. So although I do reference theories and have pretty extensive bibliographies for my publications, the content, the core content itself tends to be very practical and pragmatic. So they are very specific communication skills designed to help the reader with particular types of communication issues, whether it's dealing with narcissism or a passive-aggressive person or being more confident at work or lowering one's nervousness before speaking. So I tend to offer very specific suggestions so that the reader can incorporate the suggestions and experience improvement pretty quickly.
I want to read some of your titles. I think they're incredible. And people can get to this site by going to NIPRESTON. It looks like NI, but pronounced knee, Preston.com, and the publications are there. One of them in particular, How to Communicate Effectively and Handle Difficult People, they can buy on your site. It's a download. Do you realize that this book is for sale for $700 on Amazon?
Yes, I do. And I don't recommend that your listeners purchase the more expensive version. Please feel free to visit my website, NIPRESTON.com. Click on publications, and your readers, or your listeners, I should say, they can download excerpts of almost all of my publications for free. So if they want to read just a section of the books, they're welcome to do so.
I want to read some of the titles, and then I'm going to hone in on some things. That one, which I think is going to be great, and I'm going to buy it, How to Successfully Handle Passive-Aggressive People, Communication Success with 4 Personality Types that you just talked about, Are You Too Nice? How to Successfully Handle Narcissists, A Practical Guide for Narcissists to Change, How to Let Go of Negative Thoughts, How to Successfully Handle Manipulative People. These are incredible titles. How to Get Over a Breakup, Confident Communication with Introverts. Now, we wanted to hone in on narcissists, and I want to ask a strange question I've never seen answered. Is the possibility of someone being too nice, can they create a narcissist?
Absolutely. Absolutely, without any doubt. Somebody, there's nothing wrong with being nice. I like to think of myself as a nice person most of the time. My wife is a wonderful, lovely person, and my friends are very nice. However, there's a difference between being nice and still having the strength and the communication ability to gain respect, because you can separate niceness from strong problem solving versus being nice when people don't deserve it, when people are out to victimize or manipulate you. Then in those situations, you become an enabler of dysfunctional negative behavior, and you are too nice, and the vulnerability that you expose yourself to only invites more mistreatment and sometimes even abuses. So yes, being too nice can certainly be a real negative dysfunctional trait. There's nothing wrong with being nice. You just want to combine it with strong, assertive ability so that you can draw boundaries with people when necessary.
I want to describe a situation that happened in my life many years ago, and I want you to evaluate it and tell me whether it's me being too nice or them, or I'm developing somebody in a narcissistic way. A couple, three children, they both have full-time jobs. They come home, he sits down in his chair and reads the paper. The wife makes the meals, takes care of the kids, does everything else. He sits and reads the paper and watches TV. She finally has a conversation with him and says, "This is not fair. There are things here that you could help me do so I'm not so tired and drug out all the time." He says, "I make more money than you, therefore I get to sit and do whatever I want to do." So the wife busts her butt to make more money than him. She comes back for another conversation, and he says, "Oh, I was just kidding," and he continues to sit. What is that situation? How do you get out of it? What do you do about it?
Wow, that's an amazing story that you just described. There's so many dynamics here that let me just quickly identify a couple of them. First of all, there's certainly issues of privilege and entitlement here. And without knowing the individuals in some detail, it's hard for me to target them as narcissists or not. But what I can say is one of the common traits for a narcissist is entitlement, a sense of entitlement, and not realizing where one's own desire ends and another human being begins. So the classic narcissist tends to take advantage of people and has a relatively low conscience level about it. Another aspect of this scenario that you described to me could be conflict between gender types. But probably the key element, the key dynamic here is a matter of power. Who deserves how much power in the relationship, and how, whether or not that can be negotiated, or how can power differences, power expectations, differences in power expectations be navigated. This is an issue that has multiple layers, and if I'm the wife in the situation, or if I'm the advisor or the friend of the wife, I would invite her to seek some counseling individually first to learn some tools to be able to stand up for herself assertively and yet in a diplomatic way, so that you can discuss issues, hopefully, with so that she can discuss issues with her husband while minimizing destructive conflict. Now, knowing the husband's personality, he may or may not listen, but that's not the point. The point is for her to be able to stand up for herself first. And regardless of what the husband does, she can then consider various courses of actions to take as the next step, including asking the husband for joint couples counseling. If he refuses that, then she can consider other options. An effective communicator always knows what the next steps are moving forward, when dealing with a difficult situation. She may not have control over the husband, but she can certainly have control over her own life, her rights, and her own happiness as a human being. And as soon as she begins to realize that, she begins to liberate herself. And communication skills, both internal skills to boost her self-esteem and external skills in terms of dealing with a difficult husband or somebody else, another individual, can help her achieve this type of self-mastery.
Go
ahead.
I was going to ask, how does one get a narcissist's attention? In the sense of, you know, they're so about me that oftentimes I have some friends who are narcissists. Fortunately, they're friends, so I don't have to participate in that a lot, although I care about them. But that's who they are, and I'm aware of that. What's the methodology to break through that barrier that a narcissist creates by every conversation is about them? How does one get their attention to get through that without sitting down in couples therapy?
Right. That's a good question. I think, in general, the key response to narcissistic behavior is to set boundaries. And one of the best ways to set boundaries is to state consequence. Another way, by the way, is humor. So in your example where somebody just goes on and on talking about himself, humor in a non-confrontational situation, humor is a great way to remind the narcissist, hey, you know, is this all about you? Or can I get a word in here as well? So you have a sense of humor about it, which can help the narcissist increase his or her awareness while de-escalate any discomfort or tension that may be there. In more serious situations, drawing boundaries means setting consequence, where you offer the narcissist a couple of choices to either be more become more reasonable and meet you halfway, or your plan B is to do something that works for you with or without the narcissist. For example, I have a friend of mine who's a good friend. He's been my friend for 30 years, but he does have some of those narcissistic instincts where he's all about himself, likes to brag and show off. So he used to say, for example, well, Preston, that's enough about me talking about myself for the past 30 minutes. Let's hear you talk about me. And he's not kidding. He really does mean it that way. So for a couple of years, when we first became friends, he had a habit of showing up late for our get-togethers, and it really bothered me. So I finally brought it up with him one time when he forgot about this meeting altogether. So on the phone, I said, where are you? And he said, oh, Preston, I forgot about this appointment. But, well, it's your fault, you know, because you didn't remind me. So that's what many narcissists do. They don't recognize boundaries, and they blame other people for feeling uncomfortable around the narcissist or suffering around the narcissist. So after thinking about this, I called my friend back and I said, look, you're my friend. I like you a lot. There's certain qualities I really appreciate about you, but I really don't like it when you show up late or when you forget about our appointments or we're supposed to get together. So here's what we're going to do. You're still my friend no matter what. However, if you really cannot be on time, or at least, you know, call me and notify me ahead of time if you're going to be a little bit late, then I guess we just won't get together one-on-one. We'll just meet together. We'll meet socially when our mutual friends get together, and we'll see each other as part of a group. However, if you think you can take the responsibility to show up on time, or at least call me if you're going to be a little bit late, not a lot late, then I'm happy to get together with you anytime you want. So I had this conversation with him about 30 years ago. He's still my friend today. He was at my wedding, and he's never been really late that much ever since. So my point is that with narcissists, drawing boundaries with them and knowing what your plan B is if your plan A with them doesn't work out is important in terms of staying on top of the relationship so that the narcissist doesn't control you. You are on top of how you want to relate to a narcissist based on your own well-being and your own interest.
These are incredible answers for our audience. I'm loving it. I'm hoping they are too. Well, I'm sure they are. But a question: are narcissists born or created? And using the example before with the woman, is she further creating a narcissist by allowing that behavior? And I want to really get your book, The Practical Guide for Narcissists to Change, but I don't think narcissists are up to changing because I think they're out to please themselves and not their partner, whoever's with them. Tell me where I'm wrong in that scenario.
Wow, that's a great question, and there are several sections here. First of all, as far as the question of whether narcissists are born or made, scientists are still arguing or debating about this issue. What is very conclusive is that most narcissists are products of their upbringing in some way, shape, or form. Due to culture, expectations, genders, expectations, family dynamics, most narcissists become very narcissistic because of the influences they've had, usually when they were younger, where they felt invalidated as individuals. So basically the message they received was, you're not okay as yourself, and you're not lovable as who you are. So in order to compensate that injury, the typical narcissist develops a false self in order to get attention, in order to get love. And the false self can look many different ways. Some narcissists go out of their way to approve. Some narcissists go out of their way to charm. Some narcissists become overachievers. Some narcissists become manipulators. Some become very aggressive. Some become very abusive. It doesn't matter what the vehicle is to compensate, but the point is that a false self is constructed so that instead of being one's real self in order to get love and acceptance and be understood, one has to use that that acting role, if you will, to try to get what he or she wants. Oftentimes in a dysfunctional relationship, one or both partners will enable the narcissist instinct because of both partners' shortcomings.
And I'm stepping slightly sideways. Do narcissists come in different flavors? I mean this from the perspective of, you know, I've heard you talk about problem solving versus people skills. Are there narcissists that have people skills, and are they more problem solving by their orientation?
Many narcissists, I would say most narcissists, are very, very good with their people skills. Narcissism by definition means you have this exterior that is designed to help you become more successful, at least superficially in the world. So many narcissists are very good with communication. They're very charming. They're good salespeople, whether they are salespeople by profession or not. They're always trying to convince other people to buy into their ideas or to go along with what they want to do, or to serve them, to sacrifice themselves for the narcissist. So they're very good at charming and persuading and seducing people in that way. However, this sort of success is typically short-term, because over time, people get tired of this type of act. They get tired of being taken advantage of. They get tired of having a relationship at work or at home being one way. And the narcissist gets what he or she wants most of the time, and the partner is neglected or suffers or is victimized. So over the long run, the narcissist typically suffers multiple challenges and setbacks in life, including relationship dissolution, divorce. Oftentimes, narcissists break rules, and the breaking of rules would come back to haunt them. So many narcissists don't become self-aware, and they continue to suffer. But oftentimes, when a narcissist does go through life crisis, there's the chance for him or her to wake up and have a reality check and look at himself in the mirror and say, what have I done with my life, and what do I need to do to change for the better? Many narcissists never get to that degree of self-awareness, but for the few who are able to get to that point, there's the chance of becoming a genuine person, achieving substantive success, both professionally and personally.
And I don't mean to pick on Mark Zuckerberg, but I'll use him as an example because we've watched him grow. You and I are both in Northern California, north of the whole Silicon Valley, you know, Mecca. And
right.
In terms of a personality, it seems like when he was quite young, I think to a certain extent Zuckerberg is a narcissist. I haven't had any experience with him. I'm just observing from out here. It seems like he started out like a very strong, immature narcissist. He was driven. He had an idea. He was going to do it his way or, you know, whatever, or burn it to the ground. And or now he seems like he's matured you know, and maybe part of being married and having a child and having been successful for years. Is that your view, or what do you think about that? Do you think he is a narcissist and now he's a matured form of a narcissist?
Well, you know, I don't know. I do know Mark Zuckerberg, and his Facebook is pretty much next door to my college campus. You know, we're between Apple and Facebook, so we're certainly aware of his history and so forth. It's generally not recommended. I'm not a psychologist, but in the psychology field, it's generally recommended that we don't peg people in the media as one type of disorder or another without having that person actually come in to see a therapist, for example, and over a period of many sessions, then a clinical determination can be made. So it's not for me to say whether or not Mark Zuckerberg is a narcissist or not. Having said that, just in general, knowing what I do know about his history, I do see an evolution of his growth as an individual, aside from him being a business person, that shows some maturity from his Harvard days, for example, where he was much more self-absorbed, and now he's much more conscientious of his role as a business executive, the responsibilities that come with it, and the relationships that he established with his wife, for example, and the foundation work that they're doing shows this evolving maturity. Now, like everybody else, you know, he's on his way towards development, as we each are. But to answer what you just said, I do see some signs of evolution. And we tend to be, many of us tend to be a little bit more narcissistic when we're younger, which is understandable. It comes with a certain age groups more often than others. Some people never grow out of those age groups, and they remain teenagers, or they remain childish for the rest of their lives, you know, in a childish, selfish, self-absorbing way. But many people do tend to grow out of narcissistic tendencies as they accept more and more adult responsibilities.
I was just looking at him as a type, you know, sort of an Elon Musk or a Zuckerberg, or, you know, key people that we have seen. Like, I could even think about Steve Jobs, brilliant visionary. Yet he did seem to, particularly when he was younger, he was another very driven, which leads me actually to the question of what is the difference between self-absorbed versus being a narcissist? Is there a difference, or is it really, you know, either or?
Well, narcissist is a broad category, and self-absorption is certainly one manifestation of narcissism. Now, you can be self-absorbed without necessarily being a narcissist, but most narcissists are intensely self-absorbed.
Okay. As you said that, I could see people around me would say that I could be self-absorbed, not narcissistic, but when I am like getting ready to do an interview with somebody, and for the few days before or week before I get ready to do that interview, I'm very absorbed in what I'm doing, and I'm very, from the outside, looked self-absorbed because I'm very hyper-focused on what I'm getting ready to do. But I could use some narcissistic tendencies, but that's a different show.
Well, that narcissism, I would just call that focus.
Ah, thank you.
When you're done with your project, then you go back to your normal life. You can relate to people in a healthy way. So that's not narcissism at all. That's select focus, which all of us, which is really one of the ingredients of success. You need to focus and concentrate your energies on what you want to do. And that I wouldn't even call that narcissism. Narcissists are self-absorbed in a way where they focus on what they want to get out of situations at the expense of others, and that's pretty much a consistent theme throughout their lives. That the more narcissistic one a person is, the more they tend to use others for their own benefit, and they either don't realize what they're doing, or even if they realize it, they don't care about it, and that's the self-absorption.
Okay.
That moves into a question I'd like to ask, and this is a real life situation. Some people standing around, and one adult steps on a woman's foot, and he turns around and said, "Why did you put your foot under where I wanted to step?" And he was really serious. Does that move it over to sociopath or psychopath? He was really upset with her.
Right. just based on that single example, the characterization of that moment would be an aggressor blaming the victim for her own victimization. It's not unlike my example of my friend who blamed me for him not showing up to our appointment because I didn't take the responsibility to remind him. So this could be the behavior of several different types of personalities. Aggressive people typically do that. Aggressive bullies typically do that. Narcissists certainly have a tendency of blaming others for their own failures and weaknesses. So there could be a number of issues that behind that particular type of behavior.
Could you compare passive aggressive to narcissist?
Most narcissists narcissists tend to be more overt in how they relate to people and manipulate people, whereas passive aggressiveness is much more subtle. Narcissists often are not very subtle. They think they have this false sense of confidence and superiority, so they get in your face oftentimes, to tell you what they want and how you should change your activities and change your time in order to serve them. Passive aggressives tend to resist subtly. They tend to resist by not doing something more often than by doing something. So if I have a passive aggressive colleague, and it is his responsibility to complete the report on time, but he's resisting for some reason, he won't tell me that he's not going to complete the report on time. He's not going to warn anybody about it. And then when I follow up with him, he will make some excuse, but never admitting that he's not completing the report because he's unhappy with a work situation. So that's passive-aggressive behavior, never really coming to terms with the source of passive-aggressiveness, but manifesting the behavior that are highly resistant to the people around the passive-aggressive. Narcissists tend to be much more overt, extroverted about their ways of manipulation and mechanization.
And is there a part of narcissism in your research that looks at it from... Is it a manifestation of insecurity, or do we not really know yet?
Most narcissists, and we're talking about pathological narcissists as opposed to the casual narcissist, which is pretty pervasive in our society, and most of us have certain degrees of narcissism which can come out from time to time, which is not a big deal. You know, posting your photos on Facebook, you could be argued that it's sort of a narcissist. But for the pathological narcissists who have... multiple traits of narcissism that are manifested on a regular basis. Typically, narcissism is a form of compensation to cover one's own ugly duckling instinct. So you don't feel good about yourself. You feel ugly about yourself. So you get into this role where you pretend to be a certain type of person in order to get what you want. And in order to be not seen through as a manipulator, as a false person, you go out of your way to try to fool other people with your charm, with your aggressiveness, with your intimidation, with your emotional manipulation, to try to fool people into believing that you are real, when in actuality, you're just trying to cover up for your sense of inadequacy. I'm not sure if I answer your question clearly, so feel free to follow up if you have any more questions.
My follow-up to that would be, so is a bully a kind of narcissist, or is a bully more of a pure coming from a position of insecurity?
A bully can certainly be a narcissist. The narcissist is really about wanting love in a compensatory way. The bully is really about power and control. But they both have in common a real sense of inadequacy within. Most bullies are really cowards within, deep inside. This is why bullies don't pick on strong people. They only pick on the weak. And as soon as you stand up to a bully, most bullies will back down, and then they'll never pick on you again because they don't have the strength or the courage to deal with real strong people. Narcissists, they also pick on people, but their bullying or their type of aggressiveness is much more emotional, whereas the bully can be more physical at times. Now, the narcissists use emotional manipulation to make other people feel bad about themselves. so that they can take advantage of other people's weaknesses. There's a saying that some people feel tall by chopping off the heads of others. Both the bully and the narcissist does that, but sometimes in different ways.
Wow, that's a fierce image. That's gnarly. That sounds like a Zatoichi movie phrase or something. That's serious. Do narcissists ever take into consideration diplomatic languaging?
Yes, when it's for pathological narcissists, when it serves their interest, they do. For example, many years ago when I was a graduate student, I worked at a pretty prestigious institution in San Francisco, and the director of that institution is someone, having known him for many years, whom people might characterize as narcissistic. Now, this person is highly condescending towards people who work for him, regularly abuses people during meetings, talks down to people, but he's extremely charming to people he needs to kiss up to. And this is a very typical narcissistic tactic. They look down to people whom they consider weaker and less powerful, and they change their persona in order to get what they want from people whom they consider to be superior. And that's very typical narcissistic behavior. They change who they are, like a chameleon, in order to get what they want. But whether they're kissing up to somebody or putting somebody down, they're both are characteristics of manipulative behavior in order for them to get their selfish needs met.
Selfish needs. I like that. And what, I'm going to ask a follow-up question to that. But when you talk in your book about how to successfully handle, in air quotes here, narcissists, how does that relate to re-educating them? When you have to handle them, it's just you have to put up with it? Or can you contrast those two, handle and re-educate?
I would say it's easier to learn how to handle narcissists. Once you learn the appropriate communication techniques, from my perspective as a communications instructor, it's not that difficult. You just need to know what appropriate consequences to set and offer the narcissist choices. You know, plan, you know, given your behavior, this is how I'm going to handle the situation. This is option A, option B, option C. You make a decision, and whatever the narcissist chooses, just make sure your consequences are strong, they're reasonable. And if the narcissist does not cooperate with you, you follow the course of action that you dictated, which serves your own health and well-being the best. So from my perspective, narcissists may seem very difficult to handle on the surface because they're very manipulative and they do all sorts of things to convince you that you're wrong. But if you know the proper communication techniques, and if you know also what your moral authority is, you know, based on your fundamental human rights. You have the right to say no without feeling guilty. You have the right to set your own priorities in life. You have the right to choose your own happiness, health, and well-being. If you keep those values as your core, most narcissists, and you combine those values with strong communication skills, you can successfully deal with narcissists in many, many situations. Now, as far as convincing the narcissist that he or she is narcissistic, that's much more difficult. Most narcissists don't want to look into their self, into their true selves, and realize the hurt, the self-perceived ugliness that's really buried under the narcissism. So it really takes a rare self-aware narcissist to come to his or her senses, often through life setbacks and failures. And then one might go through some self-examination and reconsider how he or she has been treating others and how he or she can be a better human being moving forward.
I want to make a comment on your comment. So I think what you were saying is that narcissists, by their behavior, are training you to allow them to continue the behavior that benefits only them.
Right. Their schema is to condition the people around them, first of all, to feel inadequate, so the narcissist feels better about himself or herself, and then to serve the narcissist in ways that are not always appropriate. It's one-sided. It serves the narcissist's selfish needs. And when you allow that in a relationship with a narcissist, you're enabling the narcissist to continue that pattern while victimizing yourself as someone who is an inferior. And you have effectively surrendered that power to the narcissist, which is exactly what the narcissist wants you to feel and wants you to do about the way you relate to him.
We've talked about narcissists and some of their behaviors, but is there a 1, 2, 3 of how to identify who these people are if you're in a relationship with them?
Yes. In one of my articles, which your listeners can access easily by Googling Psychology Today, if they Google Psychology Today, my name, Preston Nee, and narcissist, there's an article that's available on the internet called 10 Ways to Recognize That You're in a Relationship with a Narcissist. And the 10 characteristics include keys such as recognizing how they talk about themselves. Most narcissists dominate conversations. The subject is always about themselves, how wonderful they are, and they tend to cut you off and interrupt you often in order to talk about themselves again. Most narcissists can be very charming at the beginning because they want to seduce you into their orbit, and then over time, they reveal themselves as very conceited. They reveal themselves as very selfish. They reveal themselves as using manipulative tools to get you to cater to them. So they either flatter you to serve them or they make you feel bad in order to serve them. Narcissists tend to like to break rules because they think their world revolves around them. So why should I follow rules? Relationship rules, work rules, money rules. So there are very clearly observable behaviors you can recognize from a person who has consistent narcissistic tendencies. And once you recognize them, then it's obvious. And then in many cases you might think, God, how did I put up with this for all this time? Now that I recognize these traits, it's so clear that this person has this type of behavior that's not healthy for me to engage in. Then you can consider your next steps as a colleague or as somebody who's in a relationship with a narcissist.
You talked about moral authority. Is that in any one or two of your books that we can point out to our audience?
Yes, it is in both. It is in the book on how to handle narcissists, and it's also in the book that you identified earlier, how to communicate effectively and handle difficult people. There's a set of 9 different fundamental human rights that I list in these two books. And the fundamental human rights are based on the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. They are in the U.S., they are based on our Declaration of Independence, on our Bill of Rights. And they are also based on our consumer protection laws, because a lot of times narcissists use their business savvy to rip off consumers. I identified many of the items on this list earlier. You have the right to set your own priorities. You have the right to disagree with other people as long as you don't harm others. You have the right to create your own happy and healthy lives. You have the right to get paid, to get what you pay for, so on and so forth. Yeah, so these are grounding values that I often recommend my readers and my clients to consider before they approach a narcissist on resolving a difficult issue, because these values provide the moral authority to know that you are on the right side of things, that you don't have to feel bad just because you're not catering to a narcissist's selfish needs, that you are important. Your life matters and your happiness matters. And sometimes the best thing to do to stand up for yourself and to choose happiness is to disassociate yourself from an individual who's not healthy for you. You may hurt at first, but ultimately you may end up celebrating your liberation.
Mm. And I want to jump the shark ever so slightly into definitely deeper waters in a certain way. Can you talk to us about sexual narcissism or narcissists? What do we do with that? Do we just walk away?
No, we can talk about it.
Okay. I mean, in the sense of walk away, I mean, should we just walk away for our own betterment from that kind of relationship, or is there an opportunity for change?
I would say, well, first of all, for your readers, I do have an article that's available on the internet on sexual narcissism. Again, if they Google my name in the Psychology Today blog, on the topic of sexual narcissism. One of my articles will come up that has to do with recognizing a sexual narcissist. If one's interest is in a monogamous relationship where the partners are faithful to one another and are accountable to each other in terms of trust, in terms of dependability and reliability, then I would definitely say stay away. Stay far, far away from narcissists in general and sexual narcissists in particular. For some individuals, they're interested in dating. They want to play around because they're young, they're experimenting. Then for short-term relationships, then it's up to that person's individual choice and discretion. But if you're interested in a long-term committed relationship, it's very important to make sure that you don't have a partner who has strong narcissistic instincts, including sexual narcissistic instincts.
When you do trainings with people, are you a private therapist with them? Do you also do trainings and workshops?
I am not a psychotherapist. I am a professor of communication studies. So when I work with people one-on-one, I typically do communication coaching one-on-one, where I help people on improving communication skills and problem-solving skills, and oftentimes self-esteem issues, because that's part of communication as well, in order to be more effective and more successful in life.
So they can get in touch with you through your website?
Absolutely. They are welcome to visit my website, which is niprestn, niprestn.com. And again, they can download excerpts of most of my books from my website. They can contact me directly if they like.
I feel like we are incredibly blessed to have you, because this is such an important aspect of being human. And I want to thank you profusely for making your books available. I love it that we can just instantly download your books and excerpts. They're reasonably priced. They're practical. I've read several of them. I love what you're saying, and this idea of having the opportunity, taking the opportunity to be authentic. It's all over your books. Any one or 10 of them is important for allowing people to release that authenticness of being happy.
And I think also I would add in that I am going to put a note in here that I'd like to invite you back to have another show where I'd like to talk about the theme of a couple of weeks ago we interviewed Bernie Dorman, the founder of CEO Space, and he's very interested in the idea of cooperation, not only in the workplace, in life in general, operating from a foundation of cooperation. You know, in government, in working in schools and everything, where we have that more as a life value rather than a contentious, argumentative kind of like get nothing done but I'm right kind of thing.
Right.
And so much of your information in my mind leads to that ultimate end result is we're setting boundaries, we're having balanced relationships, and it moves more into a cooperative realm where ever so much more can get done. I mean, so that's a whole conversation. That's great.
Absolutely. If you're a good communicator, you tend to have more and more allies around you, and you can help each other succeed.
That's wonderful.
In personal life as well as in professional life. So if you like, I'll be happy to come back and we can talk about that topic later.
That would be great. Well, I knew this was going to go fast, and it did, Professor Nee. It was really great. I thank you very much. That was a stupendous show, and we'll see you guys next week. Thanks very much, everybody. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Sherry.